Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Hello all. Today we have a very interesting episode in the ABM Conversations podcast where we are going to be discussing about one-to-one-to-one ABM framework that helps you drive account-based transformations. And this is me, your host, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And this is me, Manish Nepal.
All right. So in today's episode, we have somebody who is a very dear friend of us, and we have gone a long way discussing a lot of topics in the world of ABM. And he's someone who's also very well known as the Midas of MarTech. So welcome to the show, Anand Thakur.
Thanks for having me. It's so wonderful to finally be on and join you all. It's very I'm honored to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. So Anand, for the benefit of our audience, why don't you give us a quick outline about your background and what do you do and a little bit around that?
Sure. So I've had a very eclectic background, and this is one of the things that I love about marketing as a result of that. But I was actually an engineer turned marketer. My initial goal was to build the next generation chips and then in the future of computing. And then I've managed to navigate my way into marketing. So if that tells you anything about riding the rapids as they come, that's certainly a good lesson for that. I actually ended up in the energy space. So this is going to come back in the conversation later on, I think. And also in the financial markets. I've been trading since I was 14 and learned a lot from my parents who, immigrated to the US and, just said, here's some fundamental things you need to learn if you're just going to get into business. And that was one of them. But and then finally made my way into marketing. I was starting off mostly in marketing operations and then ended up getting into various startups where we got into developing platforms that help make smarter decisions and then advising companies and executives on their overall strategy from the lens of marketing technology. And one of the things that I love about marketing technology, and certainly working with people like yourselves and Scott Brinker as an example, has been the humility and the understanding of what the larger space can bring to the business world, more so than the current status of being within the optimization of what's going on in the department. So, involved in advising, certainly involved in investing, navigating investments. Those are my two top priorities lately. I recently had an exit a couple of years ago, so since then I've been working on serving as godfather to the family, and then. During the crisis mode, I got called in from some old friends from previous chapters of my lives who were asking me to help them work through some of this. And a lot of the marketing technology and even some of the ABM conversations that we'll have today had really come into play. The Midas of MarTech nickname came from an old mentor of mine who passed away, Charles, and he called me that because we had navigated a lot of investments that we had done in the energy and commodity spaces and the public markets into marketing technology almost holistically. And we've seen an incredible rise, as we all have, in the market.
Right, absolutely. And one good thing or one interesting thing that I've noticed with you is you have been talking about ABM probably since the Stone Ages, right? So probably at a time when nobody even understood ABM, you called out things, you said that ABM is going to be the way how B2B marketing will be done in the future. So, if I remember that right, you had written an article about this way back in 2016. So do you also have a background in sales, or how did that prediction come in, and how did that understanding come in?
Yeah, I was fortunate to say, so I certainly wasn't the pioneer in ABM. I certainly credit the IT SMA and people like Sangram, as well as John Miller, who really pushed, and Demand Base, who really pushed a lot of what ABM meant, especially when the timing worked out. So to give them credit for really starting the conversation and magnifying it. The benefit, where it came into my radar was when I was working in the energy space, what we did was we developed software for utility companies. So if you could imagine, the salespeople pretty much had all the relationships. I mean, it's not a huge total addressable market. There's only so many utility companies. There's only so many, and we sold very enterprise level software to them as well as services. So understanding that, marketing, being able to play a role in something like that early on, and this was 15 years ago, was something I was venturing into, trying to understand how digital marketing can play a role to enable sales to close deals faster. And so when I started to hear about the reemergence of account-based marketing, it was an interesting idea, but I had been working, literally I had a consulting firm that was acquired by Cognizant a few years ago, and absorbed in a deal some time ago. And, I had worked so hard trying to find a niche to help marketing and sales come together and align them. That was one of our, that was our focus at the time. And we didn't really use the words ABM. We used B2B marketing. So I had to really study this. I was like, what is this? ABM really a hoax? Are we going to screw it up? And that's really what the article was about. It was really arguing with myself about it. And trying to understand what does really ABM mean, and what are we doing really differently that we haven't done before? But recognizing that, the marketing technology and amongst marketers, we love new buzz terms, or we love to repackage something because, to some degree, it could be, it could be seen as just hype and it could be dismissed and you can see rise rolling, but you have to respect the power of the brand or power of, the hype, as we would call it, because that's how people sometimes initiate the conversation, which creates change. And that's what really the article was about, to say, if what I learned a long time ago is that if we can get marketers to think like sales in a scalable way, so that they can work together, then heck, why not just call, I'm happy to let's go with ABM and go down that particular path. And certainly had outlined a few do's and don'ts, which that's what really has held up quite a bit, even today, if not hopefully in the next 5 years.
Yeah, talking about the buzzword and the hype that you mentioned earlier, Anand, I and Yag always believe that ABM is more of a mindset and a strategy than tactics or even technology set of MarTech tools. But we also know that to get ABM right, you need to be a little patient, maybe a little more patient. Patience in terms of optimizing the length of your sales cycle, improving win rates, or even increasing average deal size and so on, right? And I know you talk about a lot of these things when you speak of account-based marketing, everywhere. So based on that, can you tell us a little bit more about the one-to-one ABM framework and maybe a little bit of what is it in its premise?
Yeah. So when ABM started to come out, so first of all, Manish, you are absolutely 100% correct, right? I regularly speak to people about, usually we get brought in because someone wants to switch out technology because they're just frustrated. But the reality is that, and I say this very often and people get tired of hearing me saying this, which is technology only magnifies who we are. So if you're doing things incorrectly, the technology really isn't going to help you. So any marketing technology you go and buy is not going to change your behavior. It may structure some things for you as a result of that. But the reality, as you've just mentioned and illustrated, and I'm so wonderfully glad that you've talked about that, really starts with how you decide to work together as a collective team. So when I was brought in for some of the early conversations about ABM, I never really promoted ABM as a service we offered. Just to throw this out there, and we never had a product that was ABM oriented or anything like that. We were brought into these conversations at a more strategic level about, is ABM something that will help us position or reposition for growth? And so one of the things that comes out a lot is you hear this and you see this all the time. We jump on the train and we think that ABM is this particular thing. But when you study ABM, it's multifaceted, right? How many different angles of account-based tools there are and what they solve and how they do things. So the one-to-one-to-one, which was inspired by Mark Benioff. And that's where the three ones came from. And he, it's not even exactly the same thing, but what he had talked about as Salesforce was one-to-one-to-one was the Salesforce Foundation, giving away a percent of the revenue, a percent of the services, and certainly a percent of the software. And I love the idea of the power of those three, because borrowing that was saying, okay, there's multiple dimensions to what ABM is talking about. So to kind of, in a way, dissuade or shift the gaze of executives about ABM as the solve or silver bullet for them, it was to talk about, okay, yes, you do need to be doing your typical B2B marketing kind of capacities, right? The goal to achieve is working with an account and then being able to, you know, develop that relationship. That hasn't changed. ABM hasn't really necessarily changed that. Maybe it's vocalized that to new B2B players in the marketplace, but we all recognize, salespeople all recognize that, hey, you know what? There's more than one decision maker in a B2B firm typically. The extra one talked about what are you doing on a regular basis every day or every week with all of your accounts? And so when I was in the energy space and certainly in the financial arena, you know, we had very complex sales cycles. We had lots of decision makers and, you know, our sales team. And when I was involved in those deals or involved in those conversations, we were talking about what are we doing every day to build on the culture and build on the leadership and the strategy. So most ABM talks about straight into the tactics, right? Okay, how do we change what we're doing from the pipeline perspective? But what are you doing from a leadership standpoint to encourage, you know, more listening, say, for instance, and talking less, or being able to share and elevate people more with your content and doing less self-promotion, which is generally the marketing case. But for ABM, it's how do you continue to have those deeper and deeper conversations? So the 1% is, a lot of people know this, is that, you know, if you do something that improves yourself 1% every day, then the cumulative effect has like an incredible amount of return for someone who is taking who is disciplined in making that happen. So, I mean, some of the examples would be, you know, encouraging people to study the space. How are you doing that in terms of the sales and marketing teams? It's surprising how many salespeople do not understand the space at large. You know, they know their talking points. They understand what they need to do in terms of convincing, you know, one, their product or service versus a competitor, but what's going on in the overall space. And also encouraging people to adopt another space and understand how that's how that inspiration can create new dialogue and new visibility on how you have those conversations with those companies and accounts. In short, I try to tell people, go beyond the business when you're having a relationship with an account. And that's part of what that 1% speaks to, is it's not just about the deal in front of you, but it's also the relationship that you're opening, right? And I borrowed this from Yogg's book, right? Which is, there's a quote in there, and I can't remember who the author of that quote, but she talks about, you know, you're not just closing deals, but you're opening relationships. That's precisely what, you know, I want to people to focus on, rather than saying something about ABM and then just jumping right straight into the tools.
Right, absolutely. I so resonate with what you just said, because I also have strongly believed that ABM is all about relationship building and trust building. But yet, you know, Anand, what happens is, though I'm not particularly against performance marketing, I often tend to notice that, you know, people look at ABM still from a performance marketing angle, and they put in so much of money into that at some point that it turns into diminishing returns. And though, you know, it looks like an easy way of scaling your inbound leads at that point, what happens is a lot of companies tend to burn kind of boatloads of cash before even realizing that they can't go any further in that route. So, you know, since you spoke about that cumulative effect, let's dig that a little deeper. You know, can you share some stories on how you or your clients continue to do little things that cumulatively had an effect on landing a big revenue deal or kind of making a bigger impact on the larger, the larger journey?
Yeah. So I'll give you a couple of examples, and they're very disparate, but you know, one of the other things that, as I was talking about earlier, that trying to encourage people to understand the broader context of what your company does and how it plays into the space. One specific tactic was encouraging leadership to go and tell people, hey, look, you know, go find a company and, you know, make a small investment in it. And when you put some money down of your own, you start to realize that, you know, you're looking at the perspective of return on investment from a very holistic perspective, a very different perspective. It's dollars and cents that are outside of your typical pipeline. And what ended up happening with this company, and they were in the biotech field. And so it was a, you know, company again, similar to the energy space where they were, you know, they were kind of behind in a lot of innovation when it came to go-to-market strategies, but it was a need to for them to build awareness and build that trust, which is still very critical for companies who are operating in that space, who are making large investments and needing to certainly deliver returns on that. So there were a handful of salespeople who had found ways to, they went and invested in different companies. And one in particular had actually closed a deal because of the nature of the conversation they had that was beyond just the deal that was in front of them. So she actually went in and said, you know, I'm actually, you know, been watching very closely about this. And she mentioned something about S1s and that very much resonated because she used that opportunity of that type of information in the conversation with someone else who also had, you know, a love for that particular industry. And it wasn't just I got some sort of news feed and I'm going, you know, from a tool and it told me that you like this, therefore I'm going to use this particular phrase. It was something very in depth. So while that may not be scalable, the culture of being able to encourage people to do that was certainly a big deal. So she ended up landing like a 9-figure deal. So it was more than $10 million in terms of that particular opportunity. Now, it's a little easier to certainly to do that in the biotech field than it is, say, in, you know, maybe SaaS-based types of initiatives. So let me throw another example that came up that was a good one. You may have heard this one before, but I had to learn this lesson myself, which was, you know, when I first got into marketing, I thought all my stuff and things I was putting together was really good. And then someone told me that this really doesn't work out. So I was like, fine, I'm going to start. Give me your list. I'm going to start calling. And guess what? Not only was I struggling and becoming very empathetic about how the salespeople were taking my points, taking our material and resources, and then being able to, you know, recognize that, and for me to be able to recognize how ineffective that was, or how I needed to change the way that we were helping the salespeople truly align was one of the components. And then the flip side was certainly to have salespeople to come in and brainstorm, you know, taking all of these multifaceted aspects into consideration when you're trying to come up with a new strategy or a new message, or who are you going to upset if you do this versus that. And for many salespeople, you know, they're very tactical and that's their job and they're very good at doing it. But when it comes to thinking about something, you know, that's larger about the strategic nature of things, that sometimes gets lost in the day-to-day discipline of salespeople. So being able to bridge that gap and understanding was very useful with this other firm that we ended up working with. It was a BDC company, but they had an army of sales and marketing teams focused on the partnership side of things. So they were building relationships not only with, athletes and potential, you know, influencers, but they were all, which they were white gloving, and this was 9 years ago. Then they were also trying to find partners and work with partners for distribution sake, for cross promotion. And those partnerships really deliver, you know, a significant value for the brand at that particular time. And so much so that they understood enough that a lot of that type of effort gave them a 9% boost in revenue for that particular set alone really changed and made 9% growth in that quarter alone, you know, for the marketing and sales teams on the partnership side, which sounds minor, single digits, but it's huge because typically they're celebrating at 2 or 3. So this was, 3 times the effect of what they were doing. And so what's important about all of that was that they truly sat down and understood something beyond the pipeline that's in front of them and embrace that. And once you get into that habit of doing so, it's kind of like going to the gym. It's like running a marathon. It's like reading books or it's journaling. You know, once you get into that habit, it starts to come very naturally to you and you incorporate that into your narratives, which gives you a more authentic feel than I'm trying to force something into your, you know, into this deal or this discussion in some capacity or another.
Right, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And the reason this resonates so much with me is because I started my career as a salesperson and then eventually moved into marketing. So I definitely understand that the salesperson does not want more leads. And what they want is people with buying intent who are well engaged and take the conversation forward. Right. So before we move forward, you know, we want to take a quick sidestep and thank our sponsors, which is Zest.is. And to all our listeners, as you might already know, Zest is a marketing content stream that sits into your Google Chrome browser as a new tab extension. And it's a website where you can either discover or submit high quality articles, podcasts, infographics, videos, and ebooks. Its AI powered algorithm allows you to handpick your personalized content feed that is very specific to your taste.
And as marketers and content creators, Yag and I use Zest a lot of times. And based on the feedback that we have been getting from you guys, our listeners of the podcast, many of you also use Zest to promote as well as explore new content to and from like-minded marketing communities across the world. So if you want to continue doing that, and if you want to show your support for what Yag and I are doing with this podcast, you can get a content boost by going to zest.is/contentboost and applying for a $75 off on your first boost by letting them know that you heard it first from the ABM Conversations podcast. So getting back to the question, Anand, I want to talk a little bit about the impact story of ABM campaigns. You know, at the management levels, the folks are always thinking about how they can tell the story of ABM performance at their next board meeting, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, according to you, what are the key stakeholder considerations for an ABM campaign in terms of marketers, account executives, sales development representatives, and data personnel? What are the key stakeholder considerations?
Well, that's a good question. So one of the things that, especially if you're going to be reporting to the board level, or maybe even if it's a director level speaking to the exec level, one of the first conversations you always have is, you know, how are you defining success across these different stakeholders? What's their part in the ABM conversation? Everybody knows you want more revenue and less return. Okay, so we get that. Everybody understands that. But what specifically are some of these leaders leading their teams of these stakeholders trying to understand what those, you know, what is the success metrics for that? And I think we get a lot of confusion about how we celebrate that within the teams and how that bubbles up into the conversations that either execs or C-level people talk about to their boards. So what constitutes success for marketers and some of the case studies or the use cases that they could speak to are going to be different from an SDR. You know, account execs are going to be different from everything else. Yes, they collectively are going to be generating more more growth as a result of that. But really, that's one of the areas where helping other people and other stakeholders empathize with what success looks like, and then celebrating that so that other people understand what that success looks like and can celebrate with them is incredibly important. That's what builds good culture. That's what builds good camaraderie, and certainly builds a culture of sharing and alignment that we all talk about. So, you know, if an SDR understands that if a marketer hits this particular milestone, then hey, that's awesome. They can honestly and authentically go, that SDR person can go and say, hey, look, you did fantastic. I heard, you know, this must have been a really big deal. Congratulations on making that milestone. So I think being able to cross-pollinate in terms of what you understand as your part in the success, and having other people understand that is one of those more management style type of engagements where one of the considerations that would be at play in that capacity. Another one that I like talking about, and I got this from more of the consultants that we brought on who were tactically working with many of the consultants and deploying the solutions was, where are you able to share with other people the tactics that have worked for you? How do you create a process that standardizes that across other, you know, other team members, whether they are disparate, you know, they're basically disparate geographically, or perhaps they're, you know, across different P&Ls. So being able to share a lot of those stories on a regular basis, yes, some people use stand up, some use quarterly meetings, some use, you know, wiki pages, some others use Slack, whatever the mechanism needs to be, managing and overseeing that and helping other people within your teams across those different disciplines be able to, you know, take advantage of what other people are doing that are successful is incredibly important, which means you need to hire people who have low ego and high impact, or high performers who are willing to and are likely to help other people as much as they are, you know, certainly accomplishing their own particular goals.
Right, absolutely. And the fun part about what you just said is that, you know, we spoke about this. There's a lot of confusion within the management or at the top level about the holistic aspect of ABM. Now, there's an extension to that, right? For example, a lot of time we tend to confuse between account-based marketing and account-based sales. Mm. What I mean by that is, you know, everything that we do in terms of ABM is with an intent to sell. For example, if you've clearly identified your target accounts, you don't want to be sending tacos to them and asking for a meeting, right? The moment the moment you're gifting, before even getting to know them, or before even building trust, you're kind of telling them that you have an agenda. So in my mind, to me, what I think account-based marketing is about engaging and building those relationships with your customer across different channels, building mm-hmm. credibility, building trust with your target community, and then letting them initiate a conversation with you, whether they're asking for help or maybe sometimes you yourself volunteer for help. So from your point of view, how do you see the difference between ABM and account-based sales? And since you've consulted for a lot of companies, you know, if you can talk us a little about the kind of changes that you have wanted an organization to make the moment they started implementing ABM in their organization.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I'll throw a question back at you and then we'll answer the question, which is, you know, is account-based sales different than how do you see account-based sales that's changed over time in the ABM conversation? Like, what are a couple of things that you've seen that has made that change or shift?
Right. So, for example, what I think is that in a lot of times, you know, I believe that ABM started from the angle of previously what was known as, say, account management or key account management. People targeted a specific set of accounts and then they started selling towards them. And what happened was that slowly translated into marketing. And then people started making marketing folks sit with salespeople and they started generating a lot of leads and making sure that the specific leads are sent to salespeople. And what ended up happening was a lot of AEs were dumped with a lot of leads and mm-hmm. it was not going anywhere. You know, people wanted a specific set of intent, people coming in, and from that's where the social selling aspect was also invoked. People, again, you know, social selling also was being confused by a lot of people. It's about you building your brand, you building yourself as an authority, and you know, people coming to you asking for questions, something like what Scott Brinker has done, something like what Sangram has done. But instead, what is happening on the other side is people are targeting set of people on LinkedIn. The moment someone accepts a connection request, they are getting a sales pitch. You know, that is something I really don't want to happen. On the other hand, what I think ABM should be is that you start creating great content, you start engaging with people, you start building trust, you start building, you know, this podcast, for example, right? So we are talking about a lot of marketing content. We don't have any intent to sell something. But tomorrow, if somebody has a content request, they're probably going to come back and reach out to Manish and ask, like, can you help us with your content? Or if somebody is looking for help on ABM or help in terms of MarTech, people reach out to me and sometimes, you know, talk about how do I reduce the CAC through this channel? Can you help me a little about it? So that that kind of occupying that kind of a mindset through what you do to a specific set of audience. We are not appealing to everyone, but we are appealing to a specific set of B2B audience. And that is what I think ABM should be.
Yeah, that's well said and well summarized. And certainly elements of that were definitely, you know, things that we had tried to work with companies to try to recognize that, you know, I remember there was a gentleman who led sales at Pardot before they were acquired. And he always had this conversation about not being too creepy. And, you know, the example you mentioned about people connecting with someone on LinkedIn or reaching out and, you know, obviously trying to get married before they actually, you know, got to know one another was something that would be or dating, you know, that would be something that was a huge no-no and a big turnoff. It's interesting. We're actually starting to see that again. In the crisis mode, a lot of companies are starting to take advantage, you know, try to take advantage of, you know, how technology can rapidly do things at scale, but they themselves are not taking the opportunity to develop the relationship that they need in order to make that happen. So, you know, I mean, part of what we were talking about earlier about, you know, what this debate I had with myself, which sounds arrogant, but it was actually really a culmination of conversations about ABM, was, you know, being able to help sales be more intelligent on how they sell. So if they are going to have to be rapid in doing that, then doing it the right way, doing it with some patience. So we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I'll bring it back up again, which a lot of times I was telling people, do less, listen more, and, you know, do less. And I got the strangest eyes. I got the, you know, it was like people were looking at me like, are you crazy? Some of the vendors and consultants were, you know, looking at me as if, no, I need more billable work as a result of this, or I need to close this deal. But the reality is until you feel the pain of being able to do this right, and then know how to extract that out for yourself, right? Some SDRs or some account-based salespeople love to use video as means to sell. Some love to use, you know, something like, you know, being an authoritative figure on LinkedIn and having real genuine conversations. Some, you know, enjoy being able to be a field marketer or field, you know, in the field selling in that particular capacity. So, you know, part of ABM is, while we want to treat our accounts differently, we still treat our salespeople as if they're all the same. And this was one of the biggest, changes that we strive to get a leadership to consider, is, you know, appreciate the diversity of your, and the mindset, as you mentioned earlier, Manish, right? The diversity of your teams and how they can sell and how do they connect, because the more authentic they can be, as we all talk about this, right, the better that they can, you know, and the more confidence they can get into an opportunity and be able to sell. And so for marketers to be able to help them do that means you have to go beyond the typical demographics. It's not just about geography. Like, everybody in, you know, in India are all the same, right? We were talking about it before we got on the call about how incredibly diverse India is, and being able to just assume something about all Indians, or say assume something about everybody in southern United States or versus northern or western or whatever. I mean, that's a very incorrect way of doing things. And part of account-based marketing is to look beyond the business, right? Look beyond the typical breakdowns and develop clusters of people and accounts that are outside of the usual, you know, boxes of, you know, industry and size and other things like that, to interests and opportunities that or problems that they're experiencing as a result of that. And so while maybe they fall into a certain category, because you definitely still have to have certain structure, you know, you want to make sure that all your salespeople are fairly treated in terms of the opportunities they have, you know, at their particular level of seniority or capability. You still want to be able to arm them with something where they can narrate a story. And I think some of the best people, salespeople, are very good at being able to listen very well and very carefully and be able to narrate a good dialogue with their prospects. Or account executives who really get to understand and get to know their, which a lot of times doesn't even come up in the ABM conversation, but a lot of the prospects who are, or a lot of the customers, account execs really do spend time with them and understand that. And none of that feedback actually goes back to sales about, oh, well, this is what we learned. This is what we, you know, here's how the top of the sales process had worked, and how do we end up, you know, being able to learn from that lesson next time. Or someone like this is interested in these types of things. Maybe this is something you should try to consider, and that could have shortened the sales cycle in that way. So I think appreciating diversity in terms of the mindset, in terms of how you sell, in terms of how you market, really is one of the critical factors in seeing how, you know, ABM and ABM sales or AB sales really differentiate themselves on top of everything you had just mentioned, because, you know, authenticity and certainly the attention and trust, you know, virtuous cycle is very important for people to develop, for you to develop and be part of the brand that that helps sell and create that, as HubSpot's been promoting lately, the flywheel effect, right?
Right, right, absolutely. And in fact, interestingly that you spoke about diversity, I remember one of the times where I was working in Europe on a project and somebody asked me, do I speak Indian? And I had to tell them that Indian is not a language. So those kind of things also happen. By the way, you know, since we spoke of ABM and account-based sales, there is this trend where now everybody is talking about account-based everything. So, you know, what is your understanding of that? Or, you know, if you could throw some light on how do you see that aspect?
I think the more that things change, the more they stay the same. So I guess one of the things that I had helped a lot of companies, particularly early on, or those that brought ABM to the forefront of some of the conversations we were talking about, was this goes back to what are you really doing differently? Or what are you wanting to accomplish that's different that ABM provides that you aren't able to do? Is it the strategy? Is it the way that you go about you go into market? Or is it merely the tactics? Or is it merely the use of the technology? Because if you create the mindset, sort of the cognitive dissonance of, well, here's our strategy and here's how we want to build a culture of sharing and listening and being able to understand our customers and then build advocates based on that versus let's just push. And then, you know, we're going to use the machine to basically churn out the proverbial sausage. We really have to think about what that really means in the longer scheme of things. So, we try to avoid, you know, looking at something until it becomes incredibly painful for them, because a lot of people get very innovative. So for a while it was like, look, we're not going to talk about ABM until you get the basics of B2B marketing or B2B, you know, traditional B2B sales, right? Cause you know, incorporating account-based marketing gets you into a huge, vat of trouble, expense, and if the people aren't doing, you know, if the way that you're leading your teams aren't changing, that's the source of everything in the first place. So account-based everything, I'm going to be very flippant about it and say, very direct about it and say, look, it's basically an evolution of B2B and B2B marketing. There's lots of acronyms and clever, you know, terms for a lot of these things, but there was one that I'll throw in the mix where I was saying ABM is basically an MBA, and meaning like you're masterfully being authentic about whatever you're doing. That doesn't change. As a matter of fact, I have a gift here behind me, on the bookshelf, from a client. And she gave me this book because I used to talk about it all the time. And there's a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's been around since the 1930s. As a matter of fact, this is one of the first 50,000 copies, and it was signed. And, you know, she gave it to me as a gift because these fundamental human nature things don't change. But how you react to them, if you let technology drive too much of how you're doing things and not how you want to appear as a brand or as a collective sales and marketing effort, then you're going to you're going to take these missteps. So account-based everything doesn't sound like it's just the natural course of what B2B has always been from the get-go, even from, you know, when ITSMA had brought up the idea of account-based marketing, which actually they knew that that's what they were trying to accomplish was let's think beyond your traditional, here's your key accounts, here's your, you know, target of geographic area. You know, you do something independently from someone else type of a, you know, approach. So, and Bev talks about this an incredible amount. She's one of the key players at ITSMA, who speaks to this. Bev Burgess, I think is her name. So, I'm sure she'll have an interesting take on the whole thing, but.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Like you said, I think it's one of those things that we marketers marketers like to do by coming up with new buzzword every now and then and just create a hype around it. That's it.
Yeah. We did the same thing with marketing automation, right? We have enough history now. It's fun in marketing technology to even talk about history. And I think a lot of marketers need to spend time learning about the history of how things go because as someone, you mentioned like, you know, knowing the trends ahead of time, it's a survival tactic, for me and it's for all of our clients. Being able to have that competitive edge means understanding where you need to make those investments and not create a whiplash effect of following every shiny object, as we always talk about. It's funny. Many of us talk about shiny objects, yet we push shiny objects. That's just the fun ecosystem and complex ecosystem of being in a marketing. We face the same thing with marketing automation where we just translated everything we did in email marketing and really didn't even utilize the full capabilities of marketing automation as it should have been used. And that was a huge loss of time, money, and investment for a lot of marketing leadership and growth leaders that were, and salespeople even, right, in terms of just basically taking one technology and just kind of manifesting and translating that into another one without actually changing the way that you do things in the first place. You know, without the training and understanding how modern marketing works today or how people are engaging and buying and how those cycles have evolved over time.
Absolutely. Anand, outside of the ABM universe, you are also one of the few people that comes to mind when people think of MarTech. And like we were discussing this offline before we hit record, since you are the Navy SEAL of the MarTech world, I want to spar with you on a question related to the MarTech. And that is, what are the kinds of discussions that happen behind the scenes when people are shortlisting a MarTech tool for implementing an ABM program?
Yeah, that's a great question. And let's see, what can I tell you that won't violate some sort of NDA? there's plenty to talk about. And I think there's lots of bits and pieces about this. What I love and respect about the two of you is that you realize that there is the, you know, the overall conversation and there's something underneath. So I'm glad we're touching on some of this. A lot of the conversations have to do with a lot of it boils down to one particular category, which is, will I get fired for buying this tool? Right? If I brought on some startup company's little widget tool and it creates some sort of political upheaval within my organization, is it worth the risk? Or do I take the flip side, which is for some platforms or some solutions that are out there, do I make the extra, you know, do I pay the premium and buy the, you know, larger or maybe more well-known branded marketing technology so that I feel comfortable that, okay, well, there's a whole bunch of other people that bought it. So therefore, if something goes wrong, you know, we're not the only one in the mix who, you know, were convinced to buy this particular solution. And so, you know, that's a hidden worry that keeps people up at night is, okay, well, there's one tool or maybe one widget that's very useful. I could put it on my credit card, which now is starting to become less of a, you know, it's more of a no-no nowadays because you're going to have to work with privacy. You're going to have to work with security. You're going to have to deal with these other things. So now it's becoming a riskier play to bring on, you know, a cloud-based or SaaS-based type of solution just off the cuff without working with somebody in your organization to gut check you or, you know, make sure that you're not getting blindsided versus paying the premium for the larger platform and the complexities that will come with it. The complexer, maybe the more complex relationship, maybe it's more complex ecosystem. Maybe you're not getting the best of the capabilities you need, some of the capabilities you need and the other ones that are not. So yeah, one part is the risk versus comfort at a premium. That's one of the conversations that typically happens that you don't really see in white papers or hear on podcasts or hear in a lot of those types of conversations. Another one I'd love to share is people's motivations themselves. You know, what I try to tell vendors when I do talk with them is that how are you elevating the profession, right? Part of the one-to-one-to-one with ABM and that framework is also to think about not only what you are doing and how you're doing it, but also how are you contributing that into the personality, the person that you're reaching out to, the account, of course, but also elevating the account, the person, and the professional and the profession itself, right? The overall industry. And if you can blend that mix together very well, that's a very powerful statement to be able to have or be able to go to market with. So the notion of what about that person? Like, what are their career ambitions? You know, what do they want to see themselves as? And the best marketers, and especially the best vendors, do a good job of positioning themselves to say, here's the aspiration that you want to achieve, and we're going to embed that into you, right? It's kind of like, let's say, sneakers, you know, for people who may or may not play basketball, but they want to envision themselves by wearing the sneakers that they're athletic. Bam, there you go, right? Do they become more athletic because they have the shoes or not? Maybe, maybe not, you know, maybe not. But the same with the technology buys as well is that you don't really get a sense, and this is part of the ABM, you know, kind of get to know someone beyond the business or beyond the deal that's in front of them is What are they trying to accomplish professionally? And how are you helping them make that happen? Of course, within their own organization. I'm sure an account, a company would not like it if you're trying to do something that would peel away some of their best talent. But within their own organization, how are you solving some of those capabilities? And that's a lesson that's been learned from various different industries. I'll leave one more for everybody to consider as well, as you're having a lot of these, MarTech, which one do you pick kind of conversations, is the larger ecosystem. And I think you had this conversation with Scott Brinker as well. I think it was one of even the fast questions you were bringing in was, integration versus community or something along those lines, right? I may be mistaken, so I apologize. But the community of people around a particular tool or solution or platform is incredibly powerful. And you cannot, and we're not talking about just singularly around an individual and a brand. If you bought a tool because of that, you're making a huge mistake. If you're buying a solution because of the partnerships that they have, the regular customers that come out and advocate and talk about real use cases, the culture of the company and how they treat their internal teams and how you're seeing some of those teams members grow within those organizations, the overall, community and how they, support each other in that aspect. So if it's revolved around one person, you could be making a big mistake. If it's revolved around a true community of the team, customers, and partners, and of course those advocates that are out there, that is a very powerful, powerful decision-making attribute in terms of what kind of marketing technology you're going to be picking and selecting from.
Right. And how many of these people actually have a good understanding as to what are the kind of tools that they need, in the sense, like, do they have a good sense of what the customer journey is going to be and what areas do I need help? Do I need a CDP, and then do I need a CRM, and then do I need a chatbot? What are the different pieces that needs to connect? Because once that is not there, you don't understand where you need the tools and you don't have the expectation from each tool, then if you're going to have a tool for the sake of having it, you're going to bring up more trouble than, you're better off not having any of these.
And this happens all the time, and it happens in varying degrees. I mean, I've seen some people use Scott Brinker's landscape and say, we want one from each category. That's your mission. Go buy it. And they're like, we're going to figure it out, and we're going to figure out how to put it all together. I've heard that. I mean, I'm sharing you some more overdramatic ones. And then there's some who merely go and look at, the top 10 vendors, and they just pick the top three. And then they don't really think about, like, they're just making a huge assumption that, these folks who were rated in this particular capacity by some, other classification, that they're the only vendors and they will meet all their needs for that use case or those cases. It varies so much. There's really not anything specific. I've seen it all over the place. I haven't really seen too many commonalities between them, except for the fact that people do get drawn in. I mean, marketers marketing to marketers is one of the most fluid and interesting dynamics in all of the business. There's really no other place that you can see such an incredible and diverse, type of decision making that's incredibly challenging, but yet really doesn't necessarily have all the logic all on its own. And, for marketing, we don't operate in logic, and that's not a criticism. That's just that is something that is a, we're all people who are very optimistic, and in terms of, and we have to be. Right. If we don't, if we don't illustrate the confidence and the passion and the excitement about what we're doing, then why are you even in business in the first place? So I think there's a lot of, there's definitely a lot of noise to cut through. And there's people like you guys, right, that are helping people say, ask the right questions and understand, do you really need this tool? And this is part of what I try to, advise many number of companies or executives, is that, look, you need to feel the pain before you decide to go build this, go buy a solution. And it sounds hard to do, but unless you understand what you need, as you guys have talked about, you're going to end up buying that gym set and it's going to sit there and collect dust because it's closer to you. Therefore there must be, you're automatically going to get more healthy or more fit. But at the same time, this is the business that we're in, And there's nothing necessarily wrong with it. It's just something to be very, very, you know, very aware of. So if there's anything, I think what we, you know, certainly the three of us are doing or trying to do is to say, we love your passion. We love your excitement for this and your desire and aspirations to make your organization better by getting these tools. Take a moment, take a breath, ask the question, have you really, you know, before you bring these things on.
Awesome, Anand. And congratulations on making it so far in the show. You have officially crossed the 40-minute mark of the podcast, which qualifies you for our favorite part of the show, the rapid-fire quiz round. Are you ready for it?
I think so.
All right. question number one. What's one thing that you would advise against when implementing an ABM program?
It would be a program or a solution or both. I know I'm qualifying my rapid question here.
Both.
Both. I would caution a lot of the typical use cases that are out there and really understand how to adapt them for your own organization and whether they actually make sense or not. I love use cases. I love when people share them, but really spending time understanding that you just can't copy and paste that into your organization is something you really need to, need to think about.
Awesome. Question number two, what's your pick if you were to just pick one among these, inbound ABM versus outbound ABM campaign and why?
Campaigns, huh? I've really liked the idea of what people are doing with direct marketing. If I were to pick a sort of a generic campaign, before you really make that spend, you really have to understand who you're sending these things to.
All right. Question number three, what's your favorite go-to resource for all things marketing?
Well, I'm going to cheat and say it's the Chief Martech, website, Scott and chiefmartech.com. It's always a good authoritative figure. The other is, believe it or not, I just whip up Google Alerts and just see what comes down the pipeline. But authoritatively, it's him, and he keeps a very grounded perspective on things. And I enjoy bouncing and finding grapevines through that.
Yeah, great shout out to Chief Martech. I think you're not cheating. We are on right there with you. And question number four: what are the top 2 to 3 ways to measure the success of an ABM program?
Yeah, that's a good one. I like is maybe that's not the typical one, but how many advocates have you spun out of your ABM campaigns? How many people are talking about what you're doing without you telling them to do so? Another one I would say would be certainly the sales and the inbound sales from your partners. And part of the reason I say that is because as you're working on your ABM network, your ABM efforts, if you don't have good partners with you and they're not bringing in opportunities, then maybe your ABM campaigns need to really be adjusted. And a third differentiated one from your typical, revenue and, reduction in churn, would be along the lines of, being able understanding how often some of your people who are not considered evangelists or chief level people are being called into for opinions, podcasts, speaking engagements, white papers. Like if they're doing it outside of their organization, how many members of your own organization that are not dedicated to that particular role are being pulled in to do those types of, be able to engage in the community at large. And I think that's very telling about the culture of the company, as well as how well your ABM efforts are doing, because it takes a team to do it. And so therefore they need to be ones that are equivalently out there and not just someone who's dedicated to do so.
Awesome. And last question, number five, and a topic that everyone on Twitter seems to have an opinion about. I want to know what's your hot take on GPT-3's application on marketing?
Yeah, I knew we were going to squeeze that in there somewhere. I thought I could escape it, but so to caveat that, I've only had maybe 4 hours of spending time in it. I am very impressed at what they've gotten into, but I think I want to make sure that we temper, that it's not artificial intelligence. Yag and I have certainly traded some notes about the fact that it's going to be, obviously, lots of pitch decks are being cleansed with from AI to GPT-3 just to capture that. So I will ask a lot of people to certainly Ask how it will be valuable, like specifically, how will it create value for your organization before you pick up a vendor that, or invest time and energy into a GPT-3. And like I said, I mean, even the OpenAI folks who developed it, kudos to them for pulling something like this together to leverage the power of the internet. We'll see some interesting things come out of it, but we they even caution, like, hey, look, this isn't actual AI, but it's a little bit of it. And if you could use it to enhance some parts of your experiences, by all means, but this really isn't. And I think they hinted at this. This isn't just an all-encompassing solution to substitute a human being for something else.
Right. That's amazing. In fact, what you said reminded me of what Naval Ravikant often says, that, general AI is not going to happen in our lives. That's something that he has always said. But we are coming to the end of our podcast episode today, and it's been so much fun, and it's like a proper ABM masterclass that we've had today. So, to our audience, do you have a parting message that you want to share? What would be your advice for up-and-coming B2B marketers?
I really encourage ABM marketers, especially the ones that are especially starting off in their career, to spend some time in sales. I know it sounds crazy, but the reality is that you're going to be doing a lot to enable a larger narrative, in particularly opening those relationships, as that quote had mentioned. But yeah, learning how to develop, do business development and open relationships will translate incredibly well in the ABM marketing that you're going to be doing. Not because you're going to be more empathetic to sales, but being salespeople yourself and being good at that is definitely a worthwhile struggle to and discipline to learn and follow through on. And that goes for anything in life. So,
absolutely with you on that. And I'm sure after this episode, a lot of people would love to connect with you and pick your brains. So what is the best place for people to connect with you and your website, your other social media handles and everything like that?
Yeah, I'm definitely on Twitter. So my name, Anand Thakkar, on Twitter. And then, of course, on LinkedIn. The website needs a dear changeover, so I apologize for it being a little antiquated, but you can certainly contact me there as well. But you'll probably catch me on Twitter and LinkedIn, certainly a lot more in the last few weeks since I'm finally out of the weeds for a lot of things. And I look forward to having the conversation, and I hope that you'll get caught up in Yog and Manish and I's conversation on LinkedIn as well.
All right. That's amazing. So, to our listeners, that's that for this episode. And until we catch up with you the next time, this is Bye from me, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And this is Bye from me, Manish. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.